The Problem Gambling Podcast is proudly sponsored by Gamban, the simple and effective way to block access to online gambling on all your devices. If willpower slips, Gamban doesn't. Go to Gamban.com to find out more.
Hello and welcome to the Problem Gambling Podcast. I'm Barry Grant, an addiction counsellor with Extern Problem Gambling. And my co-host is Tony O'Reilly, also an addiction counsellor with the project and co-author of the book Tony 10. And today we're delighted to have with us as our guest Lisa Walker, who's an outreach support worker with Bet No More and has a lived experience of gambling addiction and recovery. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us today. I know you've been flat to the mat with loads of different media engagements, and a lot of people might know your name from seeing you recently on Sky News and BBC and This Morning. And how are you dealing with all of the fame and fortune? Well, maybe just the fame part at the moment.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on this lovely podcast. And it's great that I'm going out to Ireland. So hello, everyone in Ireland. Yeah, I mean, it has been, it's been back to back, like you said. I'm just really pleased that I have finally getting to raise this vital subject of women and gambling. I think as a compulsive gambler myself for nearly 20 years of this awful addiction, I wished that I had, that I had what the resources I've got now, that when I was gambling and knew where to reach out to. But unfortunately, you know, back then there wasn't really a lot out there for women and gambling. So times are changing. And I thought, you know what, I want to reach out and help as many women as I can because I don't want people to go through what I went through.
Brilliant. Yeah, and like it takes a lot to do that. So Tony would know about kind of putting his head over the parapet and starting to do all the media stuff and having all the attention and having your name out there. It's a big decision and it takes a lot to do that. Could you tell us and the listeners a little bit about your own experience of compulsive gambling?
So yeah, so I sort of was introduced to gambling from about the age of 8. I remember playing cards with my dad for like pennies and 2p's. And I always remember I used to like get really excited about playing cards and sort of having the buzz from a really young age of winning like even like 20p. And then throughout my teens, I gambled at school. I played cards in school. And then on my 18th birthday, my dad actually took me to my first casino in Southend in Essex. And I remember walking in and just thinking, wow, like I love this. And although I was totally in control of my money, I think I took 20 quid with me, which was probably a lot of money back then. I, 50p on a number on roulette. And I think my first number I chose won. So I think I got £18 back. And I just remember thinking, God, this is easy. And like, and that's where it really started from. And I would say I sort of started to go to Romford Dogs and perhaps the odd horse meeting and perhaps going into the betting shops. But I wasn't addicted to gambling. It was just something that I enjoyed. And I liked going to the bingo halls. And it was when I was 29 years old that I went to the Rendezvous Casino in Southend and I played 5-card poker. And I remember that I had, it was a progressive jackpot that night. And I remember looking up and thinking, blimey, it's like over £127,000, this jackpot. And I said, what do you have to do to get that? And he said, you have to get the Royal Flush, like 5 cards dealt to you and get the Royal Flush. I was thinking, oh God, yeah, that's impossible. It's like winning the lottery. And about 3 goes in, I picked my cards up and I rearranged them. And I thought, bloody hell, I've got a flush. I could see all diamonds. And I thought, I've definitely won something because I've got a flush. And then once I sorted them out, I realised that I'd got the 10 Jack Queen King Ace of Diamonds. And I just remember my heart started to pound. And then they flipped my cards over. The casino manager come running to the floor and said, we've got to check the cameras. And yeah, and then I got paid out the following week by check for over 127 grand. And at the time I was 29, like I said, and my mortgage was £65,000. And I should have paid it off, my mortgage, straight away, but I didn't. And that's the day that well, that was the worst day of my life, because that's when my gambling really took off. And it started, I was going back to the casino, they was enticing me back, you know, we'd give you free meals, free drinks, this and that. And yeah, so I went back, you know, and I just then I started betting on, sort of like went into the bookmakers, and where I was just sort of betting £10 a day, it started escalating. I started doing tri-cast, full cast on the dogs, started 50 quid, 100 quid. And then in the end, sort of in my 30s and early 40s, I lost everything. And when the children were 10 and 11, I ended up homeless, lost my house, ended up in a hostel with the two kids. And even after I got rehoused by the local council, I still continued to gamble. And it was something that I just needed to do every day. I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know where to go for help, really. And I just got myself into such a deep, dark place where I'd never been before. And gambling just consumed every part of me. It just overtook my life. And as a woman with a gambling addiction and being surrounded by a lot of men when I did gamble, I felt ashamed. I felt the guilt, you know, how could this addiction take over my life? I'm not addicted to anything else. I don't smoke. I don't take drugs. I don't drink alcohol. It was just the gambling. And it, you know, and like I said, you know, being a woman with a gambling addiction, I always used to think, I bet there's nobody out there like me. And there is people out there like me. So, yeah, so that's sort of my story in a nutshell.
Wow, that's some nutshell. I mean, that's just, it's in some ways, it's so similar to many people's stories, you know, the 50p on an individual number on a roulette wheel, and you're turning 50p into 18 pounds and you're going, you know, I think Tony said the exact same thing when his first bet was a winner. Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, did you say the words, "This is easy"?
Yeah, this is easy. I went to bed that night thinking this is an easy way to make money. But something that Lisa said really resonated is when, like, I always share when I'm doing the school talks that there was one bet that I kind of pinpoint, and it was a 50 euro double on two matches, and I won 5,000. And I withdrew a little bit back onto the credit card, took a little bit of money out, but I left 3,000 euro in. And I always share that changed the way I gambled. It was kind of like, part of me was thinking, why didn't I, if I put 100 euro on, I could have 10,000. If I put 200 euro on, I could have had 20,000 paid for a wedding, paid for a new car. And the way I gambled changed. So before I knew it, the 3,000 was gone, within bets of 100 euro, 200 euro, because that's the way my mindset. And then suddenly when that 3,000 is gone, your whole mindset changes the other way for chasing. So I'd imagine even in your own story, like, it's kind of like it sounded like a longer descent from 120 something thousand. It's a huge amount of money to win, but it sounds like a similar type of psychology, that it's kind of like, oh, this is free money, but also I could win more. This could mean more. And it's heartbreaking to hear how it unraveled, especially how the gambling companies had tried to entice you back in, or the casino try to entice you back in to maybe try to get their money back. So yeah, I could really resonate with lots of the story. But yeah, definitely, Barry, this is easy. That was the first thing that was in my head.
And the other thing that you said, and it's amazing, we had Stacey Goodwin on a while back, the girl gambler, who talks very openly about her gambling addiction as well. You know, she talks about this day where she won, I think, about £50,000 on slots, and it would have cleared all her debts and, yeah, sorted everything out, you know, which is, on paper, it's the dream, you know, just win enough money, get yourself out of the hole, walk away, and everything will be sorted. And then she said that, you know, that she just sat there and it felt like her life was over, like that she had no meaning left anymore because she'd supposedly reached the goal and this horrible anti-climax. And then, of course, she had lost the 50,000 in a very, very short space of time after that. And you say that, you know, that day when you won the 127,000, I mean, getting dealt a royal flush, obviously, you know, is extremely unlikely to happen. So obviously, you know, to have that happen to you in real time, you know, I imagine it's like the person sitting watching the TV, watching the lotto numbers come out one by one, and realizing, you know, what's happening to them. Well, I can't even begin to imagine what a win like that in a setting like that, you know, as opposed to a lot of people have their big wins online nowadays, and it's just you and the computer screen or you and the phone screen. You're in this very public place, you know, so you've got all of the adrenaline and the euphoria, and you know, all the people around you, you know, congratulating you, I imagine. And you described it as the worst day of your life. Now, in that moment, I'm assuming it didn't feel like the worst day in your life.
No, I mean, that, say, you know, hey, what you've both said, it was always like the dream world of the compulsive gambler to win a lot of money, and I'm going to buy my house, and I'm going to buy fancy cars, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And of course, I won the 127 grand, and it should have been life-changing money, because I should have been able to clear my mortgage off at the age of 29. And own my own property and still have like 65 grand nearly in the bank. But I didn't. And even if, like what Tony said, if I'd have won £1 million that day, it wouldn't have mattered, because every penny would have gone back, because I never, ever knew when to stop. And that was the problem. You know, if I won £1,000 down the casino, I'd have to get 2,000. It wasn't, you know, nothing was ever good enough in the end. And like, you know, you said, it was, I remember the day as if it was yesterday, and I'm talking, I'm 50 this year, so it's like over 20 years ago, but I remember it was Chinese New Year, it was February, and it was packed with Chinese people in this casino, and they all was coming up to me and rubbing me and touching me, going, lucky lady, and just like everyone around me, there was just like you said, it was like watching the telly and your lottery numbers are coming in, tick, 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 you know. And even the manager said to me, like, we all sat down, like, Lisa, what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm a full-time carer. I've got a severely disabled daughter, and I've got a son as well. And it was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. You know, she's just a normal girl. She's got a disabled daughter. She's a carer. And people were going like, wow, this money's going to be life-changing for her. You know, and when I look back, I just think, oh my God, you know, what a terrible, you know, the way that gambling took over my life, you know, and how that I used to go to bed thinking of gambling, and I used to wake up thinking of gambling. And it honestly, I mean, I hope you two can like resonate, as you know, I know you're both men and I'm a woman, but I think we're so alike with the compulsive gambling. I mean, I've spoke to so many men and they all say to me like I'm a long lost sister, because how I talk about my gambling was like their gambling. I mean, I used to drive. I don't know if any of you can resonate with this, but I used to get in my car and drive for miles and miles so people wouldn't know who I was. So I could go into a bookmaker's and place 500 quid on a dog bet, or, you know, have 200 quid on the number 49s I used to do. I mean, I was totally, utterly erratic. You know, my mind was like a jumbled washing machine, pure chaos, you know, and how I juggled sort of everyday life and looking after my kids and trying to run a house, I don't know to this day. But yeah, very, you know, I'm just so pleased that it took me a long time, but finally the penny dropped, you know.
Yeah, and I've no doubt that anyone listening today, you know, wherever they are in the world, if they're in Ireland, the UK, or we have people listening from all over the place, or if they're listening in 10 years' time, because that's the great thing about podcasts, you know, this is a bit of a time capsule as well, that there will be people listening to your story and going, yeah, absolutely. Now, maybe they've never won the kind of money that you won on that occasion in the casino, but a big win is a big win, and the big wins mess people's heads up and unfortunately ruin a lot of people's lives, just as you said, and the chaos and the mania and the, you know, the washing machine on spin cycle. You know, Tony, thoughts? on that?
I think 90%, 95% of anyone's gambling story, male, female, location, I think their 90% is a crossover. And like from all the people I've talked to over the last 10 years plus in recovery, you know, when they are talking, as this morning, I'm going back to my own story and saying, yeah, I remember that feeling. I remember that's exactly the same. Yeah, you drive into various bookies on my way home to work, putting different bets on so you wouldn't feel that you're bringing heat on yourself. Because I often say that with the online aspect, there was that kind of anonymous nature too, that I felt that I wouldn't be asked about the amounts of money I was putting on. So when I was, well, the majority of mine was online, and while driving, I'd be placing bets, but I'd also stop in the bookies on the way home to go into different ones to kind of spread out the money that I was gambling. So yeah, definitely it resonates really. I don't think it's, I suppose what we are seeing, I'm sure Barry will back me up on this as well, it's the same stories are male and female. It's not, I know you were saying before we got in there that it's, you know, it's great that the women are starting to come out and look for support, which is brilliant. But the stories are so similar. There might be different types of gambling. There might be different environments, but the psychology and the traits are exactly the same. What we are seeing, I think, in lots of people's stories is that big win. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big monetary win. It's a big, like mine was a £1 bet. And I think it was the way that the goal was scored as well as anything else and how I felt after that win. And then kind of your head kind of goes into a different space. You can say, oh yeah, maybe this is easy. Maybe I could do this, or maybe I could do less work, or I could clear off mortgages or buy a new car, or for me, buy more CDs. So I think, yeah, it's great that, you know, you are sharing your story to try bring it to a wider audience, because I do agree that we need more women and more women speaking out about their experiences of gambling to maybe normalize it with everyone else. Because as in our experience, again, I think the public perception is that it's predominantly a male issue, where it's far from that. I think a lot of people across the genders are definitely experiencing harm at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Tony, you know, what you just said about the women. I mean, I done a campaign a couple of years ago for Talk Ban Stop. And I think 75,000 women signed up last year for Gam Ban and Gam Stop. I don't know if you've heard of that in Ireland. I suppose you have. It's like an app you can put on your phone. Yeah. And I remember when they phoned me up about this campaign and they'd said that there were 75,000 women, it didn't shock me at all, because I think especially during lockdown, the last 2 years, I think women have probably found it a lot easier to get online, to access betting, you know, the advertising. I mean, that's another subject I could talk to you about all day, but the advertising in England, I mean, I suppose it's the same as Ireland, but every time I watch a football match, I'm bombarded with these adverts, you know, that are enticing people in, you know, the bingo adverts and all the sort of commentators you get, like, you know, sort of talking about football bets. And I just think, you know, they sort of make them so colourful and so bright and entice you, and free spins and free VIP bets and, you know, stake this much and we'll give you this much free. And then they sort of reel you in. And once you're reeled in, you know, you're sort of, you start to get hooked. And then once you're hooked, it's like, you know, then that's when it all starts, you know. And the amount of people that have got in contact with me recently during lockdown and said, like, their gambling addictions really sort of, especially women, has took off, you know, put the kids to bed, get a glass of wine, get on the internet, you know, within 5 minutes you're gambling. And that's the other thing, you know, you've got a 24-hour casino on your mobile phone or your tablet or whatever you're playing on. You literally click on a button and there you go, off you go gambling. And I just think to myself, you know, it's so easy. You know, I think the operators are trying to do more to protect us, but they need to do a lot more. You know, I've always said that I haven't got a problem with anybody that can gamble responsibly. You know, I know lots of people that can do £5 a week on the lottery and they haven't got a problem. I'm trying to get to the people that, you know, overstep that mark and gambling becomes a problem. You know, they start losing track of time. They start losing more money than they can afford to lose. You know, they start distancing themselves from friends or relations, you know, or husbands or wives or work colleagues, you know, and then they sort of get into that headspace where all they can think about is gambling. And I think that's the people that I'm trying to target, to know that, you know, don't feel ashamed, don't feel this guilt and stigma, especially if you're a woman as well. You know, come reach out. There's so many fantastic organisations that are out there that want you know, to give you this help. And a lot of it is free help, advice and support, you know, and just, you know, just don't feel alone. That's what I keep saying to people. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's great advice there, Lisa, and great kind of description of all the warning signs. And those warning signs are gender neutral, you know. I mean, it's the same stuff across the board. Yeah. I know there's kind of traditionally there's a skew kind of towards women doing more kind of escape gambling, things like online slot machines, although a lot of men do those as well. And, you know, you described a lot of sports betting that you were doing, which tends to be more male, but there's so much crossover now, and obviously more and more women are going to get into sports betting. And certainly during the lockdowns, I saw more men, Tommy, maybe you did as well, coming forward who are getting into things like online slots, because a lot of the sports were off, and we all know the slots are super, super addictive as well, especially online. I mean, in terms of your own recovery, how did that process start?
So what happened was, so I got married 4 years ago on the 15th of February in Las Vegas. So of all places to get married, I persuaded my husband and friends to go to Vegas for me to get married, because I knew that I'd be able to gamble. And I remember the wedding reception. We all got married, went into a casino where we had the wedding reception. And I remember we paid for everyone's food and drink. And I thought, this is fantastic, because everyone's going to get pissed. And drunk. And I'm going to be able to go off and bet, because everyone's going to be having a good time. And so everyone was sort of having a good time. And I went back to my hotel. I had to get in a taxi because I wasn't in the hotel where I was staying. Made my excuses, went back, and this was in my wedding dress as well. So I'm sitting on this fruit machine. I was addicted to this fruit machine in Vegas. It was a Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory fruit machine. And I remember I spent a lot of money, and then I actually got a payday loan wired to my bank account from England for £2,000. And then I lost that. And I remember climbing into bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. My husband was asleep. And I remember sort of like quickly getting my wedding dress off, getting into bed. And then when he woke up in the morning, he said, "What time did you get in?" And I sort of, you know, told him a pack of lies. And I just remember getting back from Vegas, and I asked my son if I could borrow this £2,000. I told him that I'd got a payday loan out. And I said, "Could I borrow it to pay it off?" And he said, "Yeah." And he transferred me the £2,000. And I went straight down the bookies where I live, and I lost it in 35 minutes on the FOB team machines, which is a fixed odds betting terminals, which I was highly addicted to. And at the time it was £100 a spin. And I just remember I walked out of that betting shop and I walked back to my car, which seemed like it was literally a 2 minute walk, but it seemed like forever. And I just remember sitting in my car with my hands on the steering wheel and thinking, "God, someone please help me. You know, someone help me. I can't carry on anymore. I'm going to end up losing my husband, who I've just married, because I've started it like the relationship on a lie. I've just borrowed £2,000 off my son, which I've never done before, and I've lost it. And I was just getting just digging myself into, you know, a deeper grave. And that's what I thought. I thought I am going to end up in a grave, not because I had suicidal thoughts, but because my heart was pounding out of my chest. And I thought I'm going to end up probably having a heart attack, you know, the stress of it on my body. And what, you know, what can I do? So I remember looking down at my phone and I knew somebody in Gamblers Anonymous and I rung them up and poured my heart out to them. And they said to me, get to a meeting, which was at Basildon. So I walked into Basildon on the 2nd of April, 2018. And I remember walking in and there was 35 men and one other lady. And I sort of, this wasn't the first time I was in the rooms either. It was my third recovery, but I hadn't been in the rooms for years. So yeah, and I remember looking around and I thought to myself, do you know what, this time, Lisa, you've got to listen. You've got to listen to the advice. You've got to drop the big ego. You've got to drop, you know what you're doing because you don't know what you're doing. And you are a compulsive gambler and you do need help. So I started to read the Orange Book. It sort of, things just started to fall into place for me. I went to probably 3 or 4 meetings a week at the early stages of my recovery. I reached out to people on the phones. You know, I handed over my finances to my family. I sat everybody down and told everybody the truth about what was going on. And I think once I did that and I finally admitted to myself that I, you know, had no control over my gambling, you know, that is when my recovery started to really take off. And I'm very, very lucky that I've got Gammonon in Essex. And my family went to Gammonon to learn about the addiction, you know, because my mum didn't understand about it and my husband didn't have a clue about a gambling addiction and how to help me. And so, yeah, so they took control of my finances. On my first year PIN, I remember everyone coming to see me get my PIN. And it just sort of like, it was a it was my truest recovery. And during lockdown, funny enough, I got asked to do a women's podcast about gambling, which I done. And there was a lady that worked for Bet No More on the podcast. And then she asked me if I'd like to become a peer aid support worker, supporting people with gambling addictions, like volunteering. So during lockdown, I qualified as a peer support worker, started supporting people with gambling addictions. And then literally probably 6 months ago, they offered me a part-time position in Bet No More as an outreach worker. And yeah, and that's really what's happened, you know. So, like, you know, the moral of this story is never ever give up. Never. There's always hope. You know, I had nothing. I was so rock bottom. You know, I was left homeless because of this gambling addiction. And I have turned my life around. And I'm not saying by any means that I live this fantastic life now. And, you know, we've all got worries. I've still got worries going on in my life, but not worries about gambling. You know, I've got peace of mind now. When I put my head on the pillow of a night, I don't wake up in the middle of the night thinking, where am I going to, you know, what payday company am I going to go today? You know, what credit card am I going to rack up today? I have to look after Lisa. I have to attend GA for the rest of my life. My work know that. So I keep a Monday free for my recovery, because it's very important that I get my medicine that I need and I'm always going to need, because I am a recovering gambling addict. But to be able to give back and to be able to give people hope, that is what inspires me to carry on. And it's such a great feeling. And I'm sitting here now with just the greatest smile on my face, because I know that this podcast is going to go out and people are going to listen. And people are going to think, God, you know, she has turned her life around. So, yeah.
That is such an amazing and powerful and inspirational story. And Well, I don't know what to say after that. I mean, even the it starts out with the image of you in your wedding dress in front of the Willy Wonka machine. And as somebody who grew up as a huge fan of Willy Wonka as a child, it sickens me that the gambling industry have Willy Wonka machines. But anyway, that's beside the point. I mean, Tony, I don't know if you've heard Tony's story before, Lisa, but Tony has a very powerful story around the time of his own wedding as well, when he was gambling. As well as kind of bringing up memories or parallels there as well. But, you know, to get to that point where you're sitting in the car, I mean, we don't have FOB2 machines in Ireland. There's no law against them. There's just kind of a weird gentleman's agreement between bookmakers here for some reasons that have never been made clear. But I know there was a huge campaign in the UK that we would have followed very closely here. And, you know, for people to be able to do £100 a spin on a virtual roulette machine was absolute madness, although people can still do that online, obviously. But to get to your rock bottom moment and to make all the decisions that you made, which are not easy decisions. I mean, we work with people every day to try and encourage them to do many of the things that you described there, you know, tell all the important people in your life, you know, so you're painting yourself into a corner where it's difficult to have a relapse, hand over financial control, you know, to make, again, you're protecting yourself from yourself and protecting against relapse. You know, if it's going to meetings, for some people, it'll be meetings. For some people, it'll be counseling. For some people, it'll be residential treatment. For some people, it'll be all of the above with the support of their family and friends, you know, with the financial kind of restrictions or support or monitoring in there as well. I mean, it's just such an amazing and inspiring story. Tony, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, definitely echo that. It's an amazing story and told brilliantly. And you're right, Lisa, it will help so many people listening who want to make that first step into looking for that help or support. Yeah, and it definitely, the story about the wedding definitely resonates with me. It's kind of, when we're doing the school talks, I speak about how many milestones in my life have been ruined because of gambling. And, you know, my wedding was one of them. And just the image of you sitting in your wedding dress playing machines when you're supposed to be, you know, with your family and friends celebrating what's supposed to be the happiest day of your life. It really shows the power that the gambling addiction can have over people, because anyone who hasn't experienced problem gambling or anyone who might understand the addiction with kind of syndrome, which that woman must be mad. Like, you know, she's out there on her own, but you're not, because that story is told in different versions by so many people. Everyone will have their different wedding stories or stories like that, that how gambling has taken something that's supposed to be so special and absolutely just ruined it. And it's great to hear, you know, that you've got into recovery. And the one, what I was kind of thinking when you were sharing that as well, is it reminded me of a video I would have talked about here on the podcast before, a TED Talk video by Michael Brody Waite, where he talks about three elements of his recovery: surrendering the outcome, demonstrating rigorous authenticity, and doing the uncomfortable work. And your story demonstrates all that, like having the openness and honesty to talk to your work, talk to your family about your recovery, telling your work, this is what I need to do in my recovery. I need to attend my meetings, involving your family in the recovery. It's not an easy thing to do. And sometimes when you are working with people, or when you're in the rooms listening to people's stories, you will find sometimes that people will pull against various aspects of the suggested things or things that we know work. And I think that for me, those three kind of principles, I try to do it in as much as I can, even in my recovery, which is, you know, it's long-term recovery, but I still try to practice authenticity and do some uncomfortable work on myself. And I think that's what sustains me in recovery. And it sounds like, you know, the same is for yourself. You definitely sound like you're in really, really strong recovery. And then to have the ability to be able to pass that message on in your work, first as a volunteer, but now as, you know, as someone who's employed to reach out to others, it's absolutely huge and inspirational.
Oh, thank you so much, Tony. I'm gonna listen to your story when I get a minute, because I haven't heard your story. You know, but everything you've said, you know, I can so relate to, you know, everything. It is just, you know, if people can just talk, you know, and you know, let their families and friends know what's going on. It honestly, it was such a huge weight lifted off my shoulders. That was the start, you know, telling everybody, you know, and what were people going to think of me, you know? And do you know what? I've had so much help and support, and that's why I think it's, you know, it's vital that I think as well, I mean, I don't know if I'm going completely off the subject, but I think we need to educate people, especially, you know, doctors, health workers. You know, I'm a great believer as well, perhaps going into schools, like secondary schools, and teaching the children about gambling and the harms it can cause. I remember when, you know, what I used to be at school, and you know, on the national curriculum, you got taught about perhaps smoking, perhaps sex, you know, but nobody ever spoke to me about gambling. And I just said, like, if I could go around the schools as well and educate these teenagers, you know, about the dangers of gambling, and also perhaps doctors, you know, setting up meetings with doctors, perhaps in Ireland and England, to say, if you do get people coming in struggling, you know, with their mental health because of gambling, then they know where to signpost them. Because I remember when I had a gambling problem and I went to my doctors, they didn't know what to do with me. They just didn't know what to do with me. I think they wanted to put me on antidepressants. And I was like, you know, why doesn't anybody understand about this? Like, why doesn't people, why isn't there more people that know about gambling addictions? And you're so right, Tony, what you said about, you know, what, so Gamblers Anonymous works for me, but Gamblers Anonymous doesn't always work for everybody. And so if we can get it out there as well, that there is so many organisations, like there's Gordon Moody now that runs residential retreats for men and women. There's, you know, there's Bet No More, that I'm opening up my own women's group, which Ireland are allowed to sort of, if there's anyone listening that's struggling, you know, you can reach out and sort of Google Bet No More and sort of put your name down to join my women's group that I'm setting up. You know, you've got GamCare, you've got the National Helpline, Gambling Helpline. You know, you've got so many different providers, and counselling, you know, that might work for you on a one-to-one, but you've got to find that right, you know, what works for you. What works for me is being in a group like Gamblers Anonymous, sitting with like-minded people like me that get exactly what I am talking about, and I haven't got like 30 people looking at me thinking, Christ, she's mad. You know, I get 30 people looking at me thinking they really understand me and they know what I'm talking about, and that is why I go to Gamblers Anonymous every week, because I don't get judged, no one criticizes me. You know, unless obviously I've done something stupid, but touch wood, I've never done that, you know, because I've got my boundaries in place, you know, I've got my blocks in place. I don't tempt myself, you know. You know, I've got every app on my phone, on my computer to stop me from, you know, looking at the betting. So, you know, anyone out there, you know, you really can do, you can do it. You know, you people that think I can't do it. I mean, I never thought I could go with a day without betting ever. And I've gone nearly 4 years now without a bet. And it's just, you know, the feeling it gives me. My health's got better, you know, my relationships with my family's got better. And, you know, and just anyone out there struggling, just reach out and have that conversation. It will really do you the world of good.
Yeah, it's great advice, and it's great to hear about the women's group coming up. I think you were saying in April, and people can sign up for that or kind of put their name down already, and that it's open to women who are living in Ireland as well. So that's a great, great resource. Are you saying that that's a 10 session group program?
So what it's going to be is you have to sign up, so put your details in on, hopefully we'll get you some details. So you go onto the Bet No More website, and then you go onto the like women's group, and then it sends you to a link. You fill out the form, and then someone will be in touch, And so it's going to be a 10-week program. So we're going to talk about topics, different topics for the, you know, like boundaries, urges, you know, things like family, relationships. It's going to be in a safe space done on Zoom, where we're going to have two facilitators with lived experience, and you can come in and talk to us about gambling and how it's affecting you. And we're also going to, the 10 women on the group, we'll probably set them up on a WhatsApp group, so they've got that communication with each other and that support. You know, there's a lot of safeguarding we've done around it, you know, so we're going to have breakout rooms as well if people are feeling a bit uncomfortable, so we can talk on a one-to-one basis. But I just think it's going to be run we're going to have two, one during the day and one of an evening. So if you can't come to the day, you can come to the evening and vice versa. It's something that I thought about for a long time. And since I've worked with Bet No More, if they're making it come true, they've funded it for me. So yeah, so I'm really excited. So I say, anyone listening that, you know, is you know, fancies coming on and having a chat, you know, sign up.
Brilliant. And that's such a great resource to have available to women as well. And just, if you're listening to this 10 years in the future, we're talking about April 2022, but hopefully it'll still be going by then, and it'll have grown legs and there'll be loads more of them. But just because people listen to podcasts at different times. That is amazing, Lisa. And so you're an outreach worker. I mean, what would be the kind of top piece of advice you would give to somebody, say, in early stage recovery?
So the top piece of advice I would give is don't put too much pressure on yourself. I would say make your life as busy as it can be, you know, really sort of like don't have time to dwell and think. Don't think about the past. Put a line under it. Draw a line under your past. It can't be undone. You look forward to the future. Talk to people. If you can't talk to people, family or friends, talk to a helpline advice. They can give you some fantastic, you know, advice and support. Perhaps hand your finances over. That was the biggest, probably handing my finances over. I mean, at first I thought it's like being, you know, almost like being a child again, you know, but I needed it. That is what I needed. You know, and now sort of like I'm 50 this year and I'm flying to Barbados in May for my 50th birthday. You know, would I have been flying to Barbados for my 50th birthday when I was gambling? Of course I wouldn't have been, because I wouldn't have had the money to do it, you know. But I can't just go to Barbados, like pay like all this money. I have to save up, and I've been saving up for 4 years, you know, to go. But what an incredible feeling that I haven't had to put it on a credit card or got a payday loan out to pay for it, you know. So, yeah, that is my top tips. Don't tempt yourself. Try to put blocks on your phone, on your computers, on your apps. Self-exclusion, we could talk about. Self-exclude yourself, you know, from the if you bet in the bookmakers, if you bet in bingo halls, wherever you bet, you can do self-exclusion. There's a lot of self-exclusion schemes out there. Again, I could talk about them. Perhaps you could put it on your site. That's my top tips.
That's brilliant, and it's great advice. And definitely, I think one of the big ones that you mentioned there that doesn't come up often enough is not dwelling on the past, because it's like that's not getting you anywhere fast. Like, I'm not saying, you know, shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, you know, bygones. Like, you know, you need to learn from past mistakes and past regrets for sure. But dwelling on them, giving yourself time to beat yourself up about them, you know, that's not benefiting you. It's not benefiting the people around you. And, you know, it can take a lot to encourage people to take a break from doing that, or do it less, or stop it completely. there's huge benefit in it. And all of the other tips you gave are great advice. We would give kind of similar advice, whether it's on the helpline or people in the counseling service. Tony, any thoughts, any questions for Lisa before we finish up today?
No, just that some of the advice that she was given is you know, it's really valid and similar to what we would say to people who we see. I think it is very important to, you know, to look at that time, access, money triangle, you know, fill in that void of the time, as Lisa was saying, and give control of the money up in whatever way it works for yourself and the family members or loved ones. And also, as much as you can, minimize your exposure to gambling-related ads, gambling-related apps. And, you know, Gamban is a brilliant way to do that. And I just wish, as I had a rant about before, that doing that self-exclusion within the bookies and casinos in Ireland was that little bit easier as it is in the UK with GamStop, as far as I'm aware. So just to be able to do that, I think is huge. But there is always that resistance to that, I think, within the problematic gambler, because it's like that last little bit of letting go, and that can be difficult. But I think there's a huge freedom when you do manage to do that, as there was in my own experience as well.
Yeah.
Lisa, we both, I'm sure, wish you an amazing time in Barbados for your 50th. I turned 50 as well this year. I hope somebody's treating me to a trip to Barbados, but I'm sure I'll be getting something nice.
I'll bring you out in Tremor, Barry.
Oh, cool. And we all have our birthdays in May, so woo! No, but listen, sorry, Lisa.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on with both of you and, you know, and be able to talk openly about my gambling addiction. And any, you know, like I said before, and I'll always say it, you know, just please, just, you know, never give up. There's always hope. And, you know, and I'm living proof of that. So thank you for inviting me onto this wonderful podcast.
Thanks so much, Lisa. And your story is truly inspirational. And there's so many things there that are going to resonate with people, you know, male or female listening to this. You know, so many things, you know, there are so many, you know, this from talking to people, whether it's in the rooms or one-to-one in your work with Bet No More, that there are these recurring themes. Everybody's lived experience is individual to them, but there's the recurring themes of the big win and chasing the losses and all the things that everybody does. But there are so many fascinating aspects to your own personal story and your own lived experience there. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, and for, I'm sure, inspiring many people to get on the road to recovery and showing people, look, what we're trying to remind people every day in our own work is recovery is possible, right? And because people sometimes have a very negative attitude to gambling addiction and think that it can be more difficult than other addictions to overcome. It is possible to overcome. Recovery is possible. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. Lisa Walker, outreach worker with Bet No More, and soon to be starting your women's program. So we will put a link up to the Bet No More website on this podcast episode so people can start, women can start putting their names down for that program. Thank you so much for joining us today. Take care and enjoy Barbados.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
The Problem Gambling Podcast is proudly sponsored by Gamban, the simple and effective way to block access to online gambling on all your devices. If willpower slips, Gamban doesn't. Go to gamban.com to find out more.